I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca.
Okay.
Mark Murray joins me now. The journalist has a new book out, Fighting Words, Canada's Best War Reporting. It is an excellent collection of some terrific journalism created by or about Canadians at war. We'll discuss how this book came about, the kind of pieces we'll find therein, and those correspondents who've contributed much to the chronicling of our history, but who've also shaped a bit of our identity in the process. Mark Murray received a PhD in history at the University of Ottawa. This is his 10th book. His last book, The Fog of War, Censorship of Canada's Media in World War II, was a bestseller. His website is at ottawawatch.blogspot.ca. This book is published by Dundurn. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Mark Murray. Dr. Murray, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, yourself?
I'm fine.
Your last book, that was a bestseller, as I just said. So I'm curious how this book came about. I guess you'd looked at a great deal of war reporting over the years and decided to put this together. Is that how it came about?
Basically, yes. It's an extension of the previous book. It came about partly because I had to do a chapter on the Canadian war correspondence overseas for my book on censorship. It's something that wasn't actually part of my original research.
Yeah.
And when I was going through that material, I was really impressed by it. The Canadian war correspondents have had a very bad press over the past maybe 15 or 20 years since Philip Knightley's book came out, The First Casualty. And I was pretty surprised at the quality of the Second World War correspondents. I thought it would be quite pathetic, like the First World War correspondents.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an eye-opener to go through the material that I went through and see how good it was, and I knew that there was a considerable amount of unpublished Canadian war correspondence going back into the 1800s and the 1700s. So I thought I would put it all together in one book, and I just started kind of collecting it, working on it in my spare time, bit here, bit there, and trying to find the really sort of obscure stuff, the stuff that nobody had actually seen at all, but that was of high quality.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff here from the War of 1812, right?
Yeah, and the stuff that I was pretty proud of finding was the stuff from the rebellions of 1837, mm-hmm. where I went into the archives and I found these rare books, which were basically descriptions of the rebellion by people who were involved in it and who were transported to Australia.
Yeah,
and I was able to use that material, as a way of showing that this was a very complex situation, a very complex rebellion and an invasion. And actually, the way I titled the chapter was The Rebellion and Invasions of 1837-38, because there were actually sort of two sort of things at work, a local rebellion and these American guys who wanted to come up and capture Canada and divide it up the way they'd done with Texas when they took Texas from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that added something to Canadian history. But I went right back into the Jesuit relations in the 1600s and saw the quality of the writing there, where they were caught in the middle of the Iroquois Huron War in the 1600s, which is terrible, terrible, bloody, awful war involving genocide, starvation, deliberate starvation of people, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, I know this goes back, like almost 1,000 years. This collection, but there is something here about the kind of writing, the kind of journalism that's gone on in this country. War journalism does set itself apart from, say, other forms of journalism, doesn't
it? Yeah. Well, you've got usually something pretty exciting to work with, so it's a test of the writer of whether or not they tell the story very well. Or not, whether or not they're bold enough to take on authority, because you really can't cover war exceptionally well without causing yourself some problems with military authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Second World War, we have some. In that book, I actually have a piece by Ralph Allen, a Globe and Mail reporter who attacks the censorship system itself, and he's the only person who does among the overseas correspondents. And he does a very good job of it, and he had to do it when he came back to Canada, or else it would never have got printed. So censorship becomes an issue in these things, too.
Yeah, and did you find that in reading the pieces that you did, that you've put in this book, and of course the ones that didn't make the book, that it sort of forged who we are in terms of our identity?
In some ways it did. The one thing that struck me about Canadian War Correspondent, except for a few cases, and usually it's the writings of Ralph Allen that are quite different, there's not a big picture look at the war. It's always a bunch of guys did this, a bunch of guys did that, very, very sort of localized, heroic sort of stuff. And I think it made people back home feel good that their soldiers were good soldiers, mm-hmm. that they fought well. The Canadian War Correspondents didn't point out some of the problems of Canadian military leadership, which is finally starting to be examined by historians now. I think it did help forge us as a nation. We talk about Vimy Ridge forging Canada as a nation. I've never really bought into the Vimy myth.
Yeah.
But they're really, going back to the First World War, one of the problems the Canadians had of understanding the First World War is that there weren't any war correspondents there until 1917, till late 1917, and there was no one at Vimy Ridge at all, no Canadian war correspondent at Vimy Ridge at all. So the coverage of Vimy Ridge kind of came afterwards, either like through the press releases that were issued, or through writers writing about it when the sort of veil of censorship had been lifted, and that's kind of too bad in a way. So that at the time, the thing that people saw first was the casualty lists. You know, where they one day they pick up the paper and there's like 2,000 names of dead people. And that's how it hit them at the time.
You also do a fine job in this book, Mark, of contextualizing the pieces, understanding, say, the conditions in which the piece might have faced in the process of its writing, and then, of course, in its publication, whether it was censored or whether it was used for propaganda.
Right.
That's important to consider when you go back, especially the World War II pieces, too, right?
Yeah, and the World War One pieces, because World War One is such a propaganda war. They didn't let anybody go over. It was actually, you could actually be shot for trying to cover World War One through most of the war. If you tried to sneak up to the front lines, the penalty for that was execution.
Yeah.
It was a war in which most of the journalism was actually stuff that was handed out. So I had to go into really odd places to look for stuff that described it well, and that was. It was books that were written by people who were actually fighting in the war, but these were, I had to sort of take these with a grain of salt that they're propaganda books,
yeah.
And also look at the stuff that was written by the soldiers themselves. There's this huge gap between the First World War, which no one was allowed to cover, and the Second World War, in which you have first rate, like 10 or 15 really top writer reporters over there at any given time. It's a real night and day thing, and I think if people are going to look at the subject more, they can use that to understand how the Canadian home front understood the war itself. And Jeff Keshen, who's a professor now at Mount Royal, is a dean of arts at Mount Royal, wrote a book about the First World War propaganda and censorship system, which I think he proved that Canadians didn't understand the First World War as it was going on, and Canadian soldiers, when they came home, they just couldn't relate to what people thought of the war.
Mm-hmm.
It caused a lot of psychological problems for those veterans that nobody really got when it happened to them. We understand, I think, now a lot more about the First World War than people did at the time. And you could take that and then compare that to the Second World War, where you got people who are right there at the fighting. People like, not only are they there writing it down, but they're recording it. They're playing sound clips of it. Matthew Halton and Marcel Ouimet from the CBC are driving around this shot up van, recording the sounds of war and interviewing soldiers right at the front. It was a gutsy thing to do. It provided great coverage, and I think these people are finally getting their due. It was Charles Lynch in Philip Knightley's book, the First Casualty, who said that basically Canadian war correspondents were a bunch of propagandists and everything that they wrote was garbage. And that has stuck on them for a long time, on these correspondents for a long, long time. And when I was teaching media, I've taught it off and on for over the years, I've seen this quote repeated over and over again in students' essays and books and stuff like that. And I don't know why Lynch said it. And yeah. Lynch was just one of those sort of curmudgeonly people who just liked to stir up sort of crap.
Yeah.
And I think it was, a lot of those reporters died before Lynch, and I think if they'd been around, they really would have kicked his ass on that.
Yeah.
Because he did do them a wrong, and I think I set that wrong right. I mean, my book will never sell like Philip Knightley's First Casualty, which sold millions of copies. But at least it's there. At least it's on the public record.
Yeah. Now, who's on the cover of the book?
That's Ross Monroe, wearing a pair of shorts and shoes and socks. With his little amphetamine legs. He developed a bit of a taste for speed through the war, which was actually quite common among soldiers of that war. So it shows up in his physique, but he's sitting there with a typewriter in Italy in the summer. Summer 44, probably summer 43, likely, with his little manual typewriter and his little bandy legs. And I love that picture. I think it's a great shot.
Yeah. Is there a correspondent that over the years that you've enjoyed reading that if you found something by them that you would gravitate to immediately and want to read more of them?
Yeah, I would say the smartest one was Ralph Allen, who not only did the Globe and Mail stuff, but did McLean's pieces.
Right.
And then he went on to edit McLean's in its glory days when they had Zofsky and Burton and all those guys there. And Monroe's pretty good. Monroe's one of those sort of closer to the front, covering Sergeant Blood and Guts as he storms the... Matthew Halton's writing I like a lot more than his electronic stuff, his radio stuff.
Right.
And he did some really good pieces for the Toronto Star while he was covering the war for the CBC. That stuff I like quite a lot. There's a piece that I found. It was written by a guy who wasn't a war correspondent at all, and it's in the book, and it's about being lost at sea after a plane crash. And I thought that was a really sad piece of writing, but a beautifully written piece where the survivors of a plane drifted in the Mediterranean, and starved, and basically went through hell, and then they finally got to North Africa. A couple of them were still alive. And were arrested by the Free French, and then he was liberated a few months later, and then died in a plane crash a few weeks after he was freed from the collaborationist French people. And he wrote this piece that was just incredibly good, and it would make a good movie, frankly.
Yeah, there are some stirring pieces in here. I'm trying to think of the
Kathleen Kenna's piece from Afghanistan. Kathleen Kenna is a very good friend of mine. She used to be my boss, actually, when I wrote for the Toronto Star. And she was basically blown up in Afghanistan. A guy threw a bomb into her car in the fall of 2001.
Yeah.
And she writes a piece about forgiving that person that's, really something.
Right.
And there's also Michelle Lang's last piece. Michelle Lang was a young reporter from the Calgary Herald who was killed in Afghanistan. And the last line of the piece is about how people go there for adventure.
Yeah.
Go to Afghanistan for adventure, and then the next day she was killed.
Yeah, you dedicate the book to both of them, right?
To Kathleen, to Michelle Lang, and to the two Radio Canada guys who were injured in an IED blast.
Yeah.
So they're the four Canadian war correspondents that were killed or injured over in Afghanistan.
I'm talking to you this morning from Vancouver, and so it's a bit of, a civic pride, I guess, that I note that there's a great piece here from Moira Farrow that was during the Iraq War, right? Yeah. Moving into recent history, and you mentioned Afghanistan, Michelle Lang. Do you think war corresponding, or war correspondence and war reporting, has that evolved? And what do you make of the writing that we've seen from the Afghanistan conflict?
It's evolved as wars evolve. There was a point in the Second World War, war correspondents who were taken prisoner were kept. There's actually a piece in there about a guy, a war correspondent who's taken prisoner and ends up in a German POW camp, but that's that's where he goes. He ends up being kept with Allied officers, and he's liberated when the camp is liberated. That doesn't happen in the kind of warfare that we have now. Somebody who's, say, separated from fighting units is basically fair game.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that you can't really travel with fighting units these days with the kind of warfare we have and not be heavily influenced and censored by them. And that's why in much of the war correspondence, not all of it, because there were some people who did, you know, wander around Afghanistan somewhat and around the Middle East all through that period, like Scott Taylor, the editor of Esprit de Corps.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, I think it's a big struggle now not to be spoon-fed in a way that the correspondents of the First World War were spoon-fed by military officers who really either don't or can't let them see the front. And a lot of times there is no front, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're covering, quote-unquote, covering the war in Afghanistan and you're in a, say, an airfield hangar or you know, some military lodgings in an airfield, and you can't travel anywhere and you don't understand the local language and you've got no sort of sources anywhere else, you're basically wide open to be spun completely. So, you know, that in itself is a problem. But the war, the whole idea of a journalist having a special place on the battlefield is pretty much gone. And we saw it too in Israel and Gaza, where reporters wanted free movement on that battlefield when there was fighting between Israel and the Palestinians along the border of the Gaza Strip a couple of years ago. And the Israelis said, no, basically, we will not let you have that kind of, you know, freedom of movement. And then, and in Gaza itself, the reporters that went there were just, you know, escorted from one sort of awful place to another, but really weren't able to get a big picture of what was going on.
Were there challenges for you as in putting this together in terms of, say, getting rights and the sort?
Yeah, there were some challenges. Some of the oldest stuff is easy because,
yeah,
you know, it's just wide open. It was a matter of finding, you know, who was alive, who was dead. I had to track down descendants of people who still had copyright. But people were pretty good about it. Michael Ignatieff was pretty good about it, and Tom Clark at CTV, whose grandfather has a piece in there,
yeah,
were very kind. Other agencies wanted stuff to be paid for because they're still in business and they have a very interesting idea of what the stuff is worth. So yeah, it was. It's always a pain to go after rights of stuff, but you know, I think it was worth it. I hope,
yeah,
it was worth it.
And
it makes for tricky things like whether or not it could be an e-book and stuff like that, because a lot of times the stuff from, you know, from still functioning news agencies, like, they want it as a one-time,
yeah,
thing that they can maintain control of, which is a bit of a pain.
Yeah, as a historian, do you find that you're using e-books and the sort?
I didn't use any e-books for the piece itself, for the book itself, because the stuff I went right back into the,
yeah,
the sort of media that the stuff was printed in, and,
yeah,
and either retyped it or copied it or whatever. But I think we'll see that more and more. The digital stuff was, I mean, the one thing about the digital aspect of the book is that a lot of the bigger papers now are digitalized as PDFs,
uh-huh,
like searchable PDFs. So you can go through, say, the Toronto Star or the Globe, and there's some other papers in the country that have done it, and either look for keywords. So you want to look at, say, the Battle of the Falaise Gap, which was like the last of the big Normandy battles. You can either go look at the dates, you know, plug in the dates, and that pops the paper in a PDF,
yeah,
file, or you can, like, plug in a name. You know, you want to look for all of the war reporting of Ross Monroe, you know, that was published in, say, the Toronto Star, or Ross Harkness, or one of those people, and, you know, you put their name into the pages of the past system, which is the Star's searchable PDF, and bang, you've got, you know, pretty much, these things aren't 100% accurate, but you've got a pretty good cluster of their material.
Yeah.
And that was really, really useful. Another thing for digitalizing, just in general, is the ability now to copy material, say from a PDF, either from a PDF if it's clear, or say from any other kind of document, by turning it into a, by running it through optical character reading software, which just saves a huge amount of time in terms of typing and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see a lot more stuff digitalized, especially stuff where the rights are wide open.
Yeah.
Like old Canadian documents being digitalized and put out in PDF collection or put out in ebook collections.
Yeah.
I really would like to see, there's something called the Jesuit Relations, which sounds kind of dull, but what it is it's the writings of all the Jesuit missionaries in Canada from about 1610 to, I think, 1713. Right? It's about 100 years of eyewitness accounts of living with the native peoples of the Great Lakes region, basically. And there's all kinds of adventure stories that they have with them, you know, where they, you know, they're alongside them when they're attacked, or when they're starving, when they're hunting, when they're moving from one place to another, you know, when they're trapping furs, all this sort of stuff that's very anthropologically important. A set of these things is incredibly expensive. I don't think they've been reprinted since the 1890s or so. But that whole thing could be put onto onto an ebook with, maybe I should do it myself, but with really a couple of months' work. To copy the pages and run them through an optical character reading system, and just put them out there for people to read as like first person accounts of what the country was like in the days of very, very early contact between Native people and Europeans.
Yeah. What's next for you?
I'm working on two books. One is a biography of the first publisher of the Globe and Mail newspaper, which is the guy's right off the wall crazy.
Yeah.
And the second piece is I'm working on a piece on Stephen Harper's media and science communication strategy, shall we call it. The book's called The War on Brains, so it's another piece of war correspondence, but it's about what's happening to basically public's access to knowing what's going on in the government, in government science, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Mark, I've really enjoyed this book, and congratulations on it. Good luck with it.
Well, thanks, and thank you for calling me. I'm glad you did. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope lots of people of Vancouver get a chance to read it.
Yeah, people should pick up the book. It's a great collection of
or borrow it from you.
I'm keeping mine, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
The book is called Fighting Words, Canada's Best War Reporting. It is a really great book. People ought to pick it up because it is a great collection of great writing, and also you get a sense of what this country is all about. It's published by Dunder, and it's author Mark Burry on the line from Ottawa.